So let's have some discussion. Who wants to begin?
We ask first who's already involved in planning or already existing institutional, alternative institutional project.
Depends on what you mean by institutions. Yeah, and that's a question, you know? Okay.
I can tell you about one. Just in the not reinventing the wheel thing, there's the group I work with that's sort of primary point of existence is to bring together academics, activists, and K-12 teachers and to cross-fertilize and work together and do a lot of things, do a national conference every year, have journals and all kinds of stuff. But the one very specific, very simple thing, and I know it's not, you know, big institutionalization at all, but it's been really helpful. We've done a number of little regional one-day things where what we've done is invite sort of a couple central organizers working on local issues, a couple academics who care about these things, a few teachers, and then ask them, first of all, to publicize to the people they know to bring more people. And what the sort of speakers, as it were, are charged with is formulating requests of the other two groups. So the activists will explain to the academics or whatever what it is they would like them to be doing to support their work, and vice versa, and things like that. And these, and then you know, this goes fairly quickly, and then there's an open discussion from all these. And a lot of times, a lot of people come who don't know which group they're in because they're in all of them, and stuff like that, which is cool. And these little things have been, and we haven't done a lot of them, but they've been really well received. And there's a lot of people out there who come away saying, well, shit, if I'd known that you wanted to be, you know, like social scientists who find out there's some, you know, issues of assessment of projects that activists would like to know about. They're like, well, shit, why didn't somebody tell me before? You know, we can do that in an afternoon kind of thing. And so that's been really, really useful.
Where are you doing that?
And anywhere that wants it done. I mean, we've done did like one in D.C., one in Chicago, one in West Coast, and different places.
I'm wondering if we can kind of explore too, like anti-racism and exploring just cultural differences and how that impacts on education and incorporating that really well into ways of learning and setting curriculums or whatever, in a way that moves beyond like racism 101 training, stuff that just happens like once or twice or whatever.
Yeah,
but something that creates a really critical analysis on how to do that.
Do you have thoughts about that right now? Have you been involved with education that you feel like does that well?
Well, semi.
Where did that happen?
I'm in social work at school at a university in Canada, and there is race, class, gender analysis, but I really feel like it's really hard to have that discussion when most of the class is white, and the professor, most of my professors are white, and I don't know, it's just kind of, it's hard to create a dialogue when, like, the space is so governed by a particular group, and so, yeah, I'm not really sure, like, if anybody else has any real experiences.
I was on the periphery of a exploration of anti-racist education in Durham, North Carolina. They were attempting to set up a freedom school in Durham on the basis of the freedom schools of, you know, Mississippi in the 60s, which seemed to be like an amazingly right-on idea, and it encountered problems. It was, you know, as usual, as to be a freedom school is actually trying to aim not at white activists, but trying to aim at community members who were mostly people of color, and attempting to get people of color to come in and teach the civil rights history that they had lived through, and to teach the type of, you know, sort of their feelings as regards to the multicultural history of the place they were living in. unfortunately, it fell apart before even opening due to internal race dynamics within the collective, mainly being the guy with all the money was white. Mm-hmm. And also being that the, just sort of personal conflict between the various teachers and each other. And also it fell apart because the community kids, the kids in the community, who was, it was aimed at, you know, grade school type kids, didn't show up, which may be explainable by the fact that, you know, most kids in a working class community of color may have something other to do than to go to an optional free school during their summer hours. May not be the most attractive option, but I definitely, that was the only large scale, like, sort of anti-racist education project that I've seen, and I'm really interested in seeing, like, other ones also, and once I've been more successful, I've avoided those problems.
Well, I'm looking to start something like that in at my school, because I'm really involved with this one group that has chapters all over the place called OPERC, and...
What does that stand for?
Ontario Public Interest Research Group.
Oh, okay.
And basically, kind of, through the whole year, I've kind of been feeling like the activist community is so task-oriented, and there's not enough consideration of process and kind of like thinking about, you know, forgetting, like, why are we doing the stuff that we're doing? Why are we investing all this energy and still not, like, not having any kind of analysis of race stuff? And so I've wanted to study or start up study groups in my campus where people can specifically groups for communities of color, for people of color at school and for white people. So a lot of, I had a lot of resistance to it because a lot of people were saying that this is really regressive. Why are you fragmenting everybody even more? But my point was that, you know, I'm tired of going to Racism 101, where you go and you go to this training and it's kind of like, okay, racial, you know, institutionalized racism exists and it's systemic, but then it's kind of like you reinvent the wheel, like you're saying, every time you go to these things and there's no real critical analysis of, okay, what do I do with this? And so my idea was I was going to start these study groups and then have, because I find that a lot of the times when you go through these educational things is that both groups feel threatened by one another, and, you know, people of color in the group feeling like, you know, white people are just, you know, really don't understand their privilege, or people of, like, that are white that just, you know, feel like, you know, people of color, like, are always jumping down their backs, and it's just, like, white man's guilt and all that kind of stuff. So kind of having groups following kind of a simultaneous curriculum and through film discussion and kind of analyzing just different articles or whatever, and then getting the groups to come together at different points and kind of finding out, you know, where have they been going with their discussions. And so I don't know, I'm kind of like, I still have to get together a literature search and if anyone has like any articles or anything that they know of, that would be really good. So it'd be great.
People around too who do. What's your name?
Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Yeah, it just reminded me of something I saw. It must have been in high school, but it was a video done where the couple local high schools to try to work through ethnic and racial issues. And what they did is they came together, you know, kind of the white groups and the color folks, and talked about issues. But at the same time, they were planning for a play that would reenact the racism between the groups. So not only were they talking about it, but they were also talking about reenacting it and trying to make it look like what they're living in their lives. And it was amazing because through that process they were able to bring out the issues that they needed to deal with, but also it was an educational opportunity for others to view that play. So it seemed like the friendships ties were amazing after the whole process, and it seemed like a really, really neat idea.
What's your name?
Toya.
Toya?
Yeah.
Good touch.
It's more about alternative schools. I've been working with a few different kind of projects. One of those is from the landless movement in Brazil. They have they work a lot with Paulo Freire principles, and one of the things that they have in the camps where they do the occupations is they have their own schools. And when someone wants to join the movement, the first thing that they do is they do this educational program, which is sharing with the people, with the person, what is going on around the world, what's going on in Brazil, what neoliberal system, why they have to squat a piece of land, why they don't have the right to have the land. And after they do that whole program with the person, then they ask the person if they still want to join the movement or not. So they give all the information before. It's pretty interesting. And also they are building right now a university, which is still construction. This university is also based on Paulo Freire principles.
Could you say that piece again, the last?
They are building a university.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm also working with a project we will start in March in Brazil. It's a school which will work like the Summer Hill School in England, which is a free school that is all decided together in collective. And
do you guys know about the Summer Hill School? Some? No? There's a lot of literature out there about it, yeah.
And just wait. Two kind of alternative education programs that I've been part of it.
I just off of what you were talking about anti-racism kind of training and involving that with education. I've been involved. I was raised Unitarian Universalist, which is like religious left kind of. and the youth like group thing, like 10,000 youth all across, like. They do conferences every once in a while. Whenever they do, like, big national conferences, what we've decided to do is to have identity groups during the conferences where there's, like, a couple-hour block of time, like, every other day, where, like, a lot of times we'll take, like, white youth and then youth of color and have identity groups where we process things, bring up questions, and have discussion sessions, and then after a couple of those, like, near the end of the conference, we'll have a big identity group discussion together where everybody kind of talks together. In addition to that, there's different leaders for each conference. There's also a thing where every person who's going to be a leader of a continental event also goes through an anti-racism training, like a weekend-long thing, to kind of instill that in the leadership as well. So, model, I guess.
Again, to sort of go off what you said, one of the things, and to make it more general, which maybe isn't fair, but one of the things I felt you were saying was that, like, there's a need for more than just alternative sort of three-day seminars or teach-ins or conferences, and I really feel that need in trying to sort of solidify a useful political analysis sort of long-term, but also for learning all sorts of new skills, which is why sort of a more static institution would be really useful, in which you could sort of work with the same bunch of people. I mean, that's sort of the advantage of a university, right, is that you're in one place for 4 years and you're sort of in dialogue, hopefully, with, like, the same bunch of people. So it really, although it's insular on some level, it allows you to develop over a long period of time to really, like, push at issues that really don't get covered in any substantial way in, like, conferences like this, no matter how good they are. Like, conferences like this, teach-ins should be, like, you know, high points for sure, but should be a point at which you trade the experience from the rest of the time. And I guess part of that is also, I think, I mean, one thing I feel my very, like, normal education, like, totally normal public school education was so lacking in, was that I never had to talk to anybody. Like, nobody learned how to have a speak to each other. We never learned how to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. So any sort of long-term popular education program, I'd want to see, like, really develop those skills and give a place, like, learn how to argue with people in a way that wasn't, you know, threatening to, like, kick the shit out of them, you know?
But for me, yeah, I think that learning how to dialogue is important. What I find so constraining about, like, academia is that sometimes we learn how to talk, but it's very, like, non-conflict oriented. It was strange for me to go from studying as an undergrad in American ethnic studies, where it was assumed that the content we were dealing with was more political, and that there were going to be more disagreements, and that we would get into it, and we would really deal with issues of race and racism and gender and patriarchy and, like, all these other things, and we were okay with that. And then I went to this college of education where most of the people were white from middle class backgrounds, and it wasn't necessarily explicitly political, and all of a sudden the culture completely changed, and you're also the culture of graduate school. You know, you sit around a seminar table, for those of you who have been there, classes are smaller, you sit around a seminar table. You're supposed to, you know, be objective, and it's not necessarily political, and you're just supposed to control yourself. And it's very, like, it was so at odds with the way that I communicate and the way, and that's not all of graduate school, but there definitely is a culture there. And it was really hard to go from my undergrad, where it was explicitly political, we could really get into it, and then to go to graduate school, where it was so, where we really didn't learn how to have conflict and have it be meaningful and constructive. I would also like to say that I think that there's a potential. I find the same thing in the university that you do, that you have this ongoing, like, group of people, although I'm at a huge university where, like, in American Ethnic Studies as an undergrad, I had this group of people that I went through with that I could kind of count on being in numerous classes with, and so we started to sort of build community and could have ongoing dialogue semester after quarter after quarter. I think I can find that these days with study groups outside the university, and there are so many benefits to study groups that I can't get at the university. Like, it is explicitly political. We're getting together for the purpose of studying together in a way that's going to, like, enhance our political work. And so I can have that intellectual stimulation and the political work, you know, assumed there.
Just in response to that, I'm sort of, sorry, can I talk?
Please.
Because I realize I'm sort of jumping. And the reason I really like the whole convergence idea is that I've had really a couple of good study group experiences. Mm-hmm. They tend to peter out, like, when everybody's really swamped in November, but mm-hmm. for, like, the 3 months that they last, they're really wicked. The problem to me is that they tend to be, you know, my 5 closest friends and 2 roommates, or, like, people who are great, but who don't necessarily challenge me the way numerous other people could and probably should. Mm-hmm. So that's a dilemma.
The reason why I saw this as being really hopeful is that I wanted to draw in from, like, other student groups on campus. So, like, groups that, like, because our campus is pretty diverse, but it's so fragmented. So you have, like, the McMaster Indian Association, and you have the Malay Students Association, the Chinese Association, the Korean Association. And so bringing all those people together and kind of, like, getting people to dialogue and setting up that forum, because that's not done. And where else are you going to discuss this stuff? And so much stuff is, like, they bring in a speaker, and it's, like, top-down, but then there's no discussion happening, mm-hmm. like, other than informal. So I wanted to create that setting, and I don't know, like, I see that as being, like, shared facilitation, mm-hmm. and, yeah, and I guess that could be done with any subject, not just race.
Mm-hmm. Seems like what some people are saying, I just wanted to bring it out a little more, is talking about basically re-socializing ourselves, like, racism, and then just the whole issue of not knowing how to have a dialogue with somebody in a disagreeing but constructive manner. And I see that in activist groups with, like, disastrous infighting over stuff that didn't really need to be fought over sometimes. And just the need for spaces that are permanent and not just temporary, like this, where we can learn new ways of interacting with each other on the basis of, like, compassionate, democratic community.
I just want to throw out a concrete idea about something that hopefully will be happening soon that's related to this convergent center idea. There's some of us in Maine, a small group right now, who have been talking about creating some kind of a permanent convergent center. And right now we're calling it JED, the Center for Justice, Ecology, and Democracy. And there's a bunch of sort of excessive vision statements about it that are on the free table in there if you are willing to wade through all those pages. But really, we had this idea kicking around for a bunch of years that it was essential to try and create some kind of a community center where a lot of different kinds of activists, and hopefully beyond the realm of activists too, where people can come together for a number of different related but, you know, semi-autonomous projects and share all kinds of different skills. So, you know, in one space, could we have, you know, researchers, theorists, popular educators, farmers, organizers, you know, all working on some common projects. And we were lucky enough recently to basically, by a miracle, stumble into this land trust that was completely excited about the idea. And so now we basically have a 500-acre beautiful land trust in Maine and a bunch of facilities. And so within the next year, we're hoping to actually begin creating this kind of center. Like, huge, ambitious project, and it'll take a long time. But, you know, we're looking for more people to come and join us. You know, it's sort of like jumping off of a cliff, but we definitely believe that it's going to happen. So,
what do you need help with right now?
Well, right now we're most solid in our farming area because there's a lot of great farmers in Maine. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're breaking ground on September 3rd to start sort of the first phase of what will hopefully become a sustainable food systems project with a lot of different facets. But we're especially looking for people who are excited about organizing and research and popular education and sort of the interplay between all those three things. You know, how can we cross-fertilize? And, you know, people that are just excited and committed about building some kind of large vision like this. And so, yeah.
I had a couple of things. The first is, Sacco and I are from Thunder Bay, and we have a small group of anarchists there that we're sort of organizing things with. Yeah. I guess eventually it would be nice to have some kind of permanent space, just because a lot of the things, if you want to educate people in something other than talky things, that requires infrastructure. So you have to have, let's say I want to teach computer programming to someone. I have to have machines, and they have to sit somewhere, and you know, I have to have a spot where I can, you know, talk to those people to do those things. The other thing is the whole notion of what we're sort of doing here, like the whole conference here. It seems to me right now, in a weird way, that as anarchists, we're almost like an FAI without a CNT. We seem to be kind of all talking to each other, and I think that as far as educational projects goes, it might be good to try to focus on things. I think I'd like to focus on things that will bring in people who don't have a university education, who don't normally hang out with me. You know, just a quick little thought there.
Yeah, when you talk about 500 acres, man, you make me feel jealous, because coming from Long Island, we'd feel good to have a storefront right now. But we've been using the dialogue process, particularly the Frarian kind of like dialogue model, to draw in people, because we want to start a community center. And but, you know, rather than like 2-3 people saying, all right, this is a community center and this is what it's going to do, what we've been trying to do is as people come down to our meetings, you know, we have these dialogues and we sit around and say, all right, you know, what would people want? And, you know, we just have a dialogue session. We throw, you know, you might have a facilitator, and people just throw out ideas. And for instance, in one particular instance, we have this, you know, we have this like fest coming up, and you know, we're kind of throwing around the idea of using the space that we borrowed to have artwork, and somebody just chimed up and said, hey, look, you know, I'd like to coordinate that. And, you know, and basically, you know, I have some friends who might be interested in doing art, and some other people say, well, I'm interested in doing this type of art, you know, can we use a space here? And it basically took off from that way. So it became sort of what, you know, through that process of dialogue, it became sort of autonomously self-organized, and you know, the people who are involved in it are just doing it, you know. So we feel good about that, and we're using, you know, and we want to, you know, hopefully we'll take that model of education and skills exchange and use it in more specific ways once we do actually have a community center, you know. So instead of just dialoguing about what we want, we'll be, people will be, you know, exchanging skills in specific in specific, you know, topics or whatever, or politics, or however it might go. But that model has really served us well, and it's really helped us to grow, where new people can come in and they can just feel like they're welcome, because it's just a bunch of people like this just sitting around rapping, and it just feels very comfortable, as opposed to like walking into a space where you may have some hierarchy and some officers, you know, or some, you know, some kind of like a, you know, we want a structure, but the structure should be self-organized by the people who are involved in the project, and it seems to be moving in that direction.
I mean, I'm sort of interested in hearing how, I mean, if you're going to start an educational process or educational project, the reason the Freedom School in Durham came to fiery in was because, you know, obviously during the summer, children of color don't want to go to school, you know, obvious point. So how could you integrate that into like the everyday life of people who want those skills, and how can you fulfill requirements for them? Like, it seems to me like, I mean, the best educational projects I've ever been engaged in is we had Anarchist Dinner, which we had free dinner, and then you sat around and talked about anarchism during dinner, so it fed people, so people would come for the free food and stay for the discussion. On a grander scale, like if you're trying to start community school, how could one, you know, if kids in America at least, you know, have to go through grade school, could you get like a charter, become a charter school? Has anyone looked at that option so that you could go there instead of going to normal school? How could you, if you're in a college already, how could you integrate it so maybe people get credit for your study group instead of just being like yet another thing they have to study on the side? I'm just sort of, I mean, I haven't seen many examples of this. I'm sort of interested in, you know, barking up that tree.
Well, I mean, I'm a grad student right now, and we, like you were saying, I mean, you're confronted by a, by and large, a very, very conservative process, unless you're lucky with regards to the professors you study with. And my way of thinking about this is that basically, if you've gone through the educational process for however many years, 30 years, I mean, this is like the last stage of your being, I mean, if you're going on to be trained to be an educator again, this is the place where they really have to hammer it home that you need to behave yourself. So it actually making political interventions in that space is very difficult. But in the program I'm in, we've actually, through a lot of very interesting details, which I'm not going to get into, we've actually instituted what seems like it's going to be the closest thing to collective decision-making between students and faculty that any grad program I've heard of in this country has. And another one of the projects that I suggested and we're actually going to have is these things called student-initiated seminars, which basically means that the students determine, it's like a study group, but the students get credit for it by signing up for credit with faculty members. But it retains the info, and the faculty members have no interference or power over this. Like, if they accept one of these, it means they accept that whatever the students do is what they're going to do, and the students deliver their own grades. One of the ideas I had with this is that it allows the informality of a study group, so you can actually invite community people to participate. You can invite undergraduates, non-matriculated students, older people, whoever's around, right? And yet the students are doing their institutional thing, if that's what they need to be doing, and yet you're also funneling this knowledge in other directions. I think the more general point I'm making is that academics often tend to have very interesting ideas, and what they lack is the wherewithal that activists tend to have of just very practical models of saying, look, how about this? You know, how about you just go in and sit down with whatever professors you think are halfway friendly to this and say, I've got this model, I've got this idea, let's see where it can go. And often, I mean, once you start behaving that way, and for me, like, grad school has been a, you know, a 7-year process of behaving more that way every year, things can start happening. So what I think is interesting is that although they might not act that way, often academics really need activists to come in and kind of kick their ass, you know. And it literally by educating the educators by saying, look, I mean, you've got things we want, but we don't want them on those terms. So we need to have some kind of exchange. We want your expertise in history or you know, in the sciences or what you will, but you need our organizational models.
Yeah, no, I think that's, I want to follow up on that. I mean, as an academic, I think that's exactly right. I think there's actually a lot more, I mean, I agree with most of the, you know, sort of critiques of universities and all that. I just want to
say that still at all as institutions in our society, if you compare them to, say, you know, Westinghouse or something, I mean, there's a lot more variety in space and openness and things there than there is. And I think sometimes we sort of focus too much, a little bit on where we are and don't sort of note what the options in the world are. But, yeah, I think that, first of all, there's a lot of professors and faculty and stuff like this who, A, have access to a lot of resources that could make things like these open schools function a lot better practically, because they can divert some university resources into them. And B, would be perfectly willing. It's just never occurred to them that you might put together an open seminar that was directed by students that would include community people. I mean, and, you know, we can laugh about that never occurring to them, but that's not the world they're in, and, you know, they're living in a certain world. And so, I mean, I really encourage people, it's easy enough to identify who the likely candidates are in a university. If anybody wants help, I can probably give you an in at most universities to do that. And then you got to, yeah, I mean, seriously, go with a well-thought-out proposal and asking people, you know, what they can do to help with this. And if the first person is a jerk, then go to the second one. But I also want to say there's a lot of initiatives in universities that are happening now that would go a lot better if things like what people here are talking about were plugged into them. Like, community-based research is a new big thing. There's a lot of people out there doing this, partly because there's grants available from foundations for community-based research. So, you know, some people at my college who are linguists have gone and done work for public schools, research for them on questions that they wanted to know about, you know, what kinds of bilingual models were working in places and stuff. And nobody was doing it for them. They had no idea. They were just guessing. And these guys actually designed research projects, and then the graduate students carried out the research projects for credit. So it's a great win-win thing. There's a bunch of professors at Smith College that I know who are doing all kinds of cool research in the research and teaching and things in the community that's directed by what community organizations want done. And so, I want to say there's a lot of energy out there, and you don't want the university to own it, and so some political careful maneuvering is necessary, but you should, but there's a lot of ways in which various bits inside the university, I think, could really be supportive of stuff that they don't own. And, you know, for the universities, it looks good, because then they can say, see, we're supporting the community, we're not just, and, you know, so what if they say that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna run out to these other groups. Would you keep stuff going? I'll be right back.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that notion of, like, using the resources of the university to, like, benefit the community, because, you know, I mean, I'm not an academic, but I have lots of friends who are, like, either in college or some of them who are even academics. And, you know, I'm often very excited about the work they're doing. You know, especially, you know, usually hanging out with political people, then you look at the general culture and you say, God, isn't it a shame that, you know, this couldn't be getting out to more people? Because to some degree, I've benefited from that. I mean, we've literally had, you know, talking about the space we're trying to organize, Kevin's had some connections, and we've literally gotten college professors to come down and say, give us lectures on, like, the history of capitalism or the history of globalization, you know, and just getting the benefit of their knowledge, and they feel really good about, you know, doing some of this work outside the classroom, you know, just coming into the community and talking to a party of interested people who want to know, you know, want to get some perspective about, you know, somebody who's an economist about, you know, the history of globalization, you know, something that they, you know, either, you know, if you're not an academic, either you won't have access to, or you couldn't afford, or might cost you, you know, thousands of dollars to get that kind of, you know, even a simple seminar like that. So I think that kind of thing is great. I mean, that's the kind of thing we need to open up, you know, where this knowledge circulates on much wider pathways.
As somebody who's going back into the academy in a week or week and a half to start grad school, I think it's important to remember that, you know, we don't want to be just circulating academic ideas out there. There's a whole lot of other learning we need to do that's not usually thought of as learning. Like, you know, what people were talking about before, people don't know how to talk to each other. I mean, learning democratic social skills, I mean, that's as important, maybe in some ways more important, than having the right critique, because you can analyze the hell out of it, but if you can't live it, we're not going to get anywhere.
From my perspective, it seems like there's
don't get me wrong, I really like being here. This is like Mecca for me. But at the same time, it's like there's 100 of us here, and there's 300 million people in North America who don't give a shit about what we're saying right now. And we've got to figure out a way to reach those people. And the only way we're going to reach them is through some kind of educational projects. And how are we going to do that? It seems to me to be the most important question of education. And it doesn't have anything, has some things to do with universities, but it doesn't have everything to do with universities. There's other things that people need to learn how to do, like talking, but this, you can educate people on practical things and at the same time teach them the speaking skills and the anarchist organizing techniques and get them going that way. But there's things that they need in their everyday lives that they're not getting, and that's partially why they're getting screwed. So that's what I'm really interested in as far as educational stuff.
I think that the other groups are going to come back now.